talk about what your superpower is. What is your superpower?
The superpower truly is that after I died about a year and a half ago.
After you what?
Yeah, I died, literally.
You can't just drop that into a conversation casually without any context. After I died.
I did.
After I died last week during this podcast with Devo,
yeah,
I suddenly.
Exactly.
Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to the Branding Laboratory. And I'm Devo. I'm your host. And today's episode is going to be a little bit about a journey into a transformation, if you will, on both the personal and professional fronts. I came across this guest at a recent retreat that I attended, something that I have had on my radar for a few years, and the universe works the way the universe works, and it just happened to align this year with my schedule and all the different things. Anyhow, I met her, and it turns out she's from Charlotte, which there are people from all over the world here, 170 serial entrepreneurs from all over the world who were attending, and she's from Charlotte, so she's right here in my backyard. So anyway, I had an interesting conversation with her at the retreat and just thought she would make a fantastic guest for the show. And I really wanted to sort of center the show around our inner world and this sort of inner engineering concept. And I just want to open with a question. Have you ever wondered what it truly takes to align your inner world with your outer success? Because everything is just a reflection of who we are inside. And what does it mean to rewire your mindset and your behaviors and your approach to life so that you're not just thriving in business, but you're living with purpose and impact? And that's one of the reasons I do what I do, is helping people sort of figure that out. And so it's always refreshing to me when I meet people who are sort of operating in the same sandbox and just having scintillating conversations with them about sort of their take on the world, because, you know, I have my own perspective, other people have theirs, and it's through this commingling of ideas that we grow, right? So these are some of the questions that I'm going to explore today with someone who has mastered the art of science and transformation. Her name is Hillary Porta. She's the founder of R3 International, which is a consultancy. She works with Fortune 500 leaders, elite military professionals, Hollywood visionaries, just a whole host and bevy of really cool people. And now she's coming on the show today. So grateful for that. Hillary talks about not just being successful, but about breaking through your limits. And who knows what happens when you sort of break through those things, right? So connecting with your highest potential and rewriting the story of what's possible, because you're reframing this paradigm, this narrative that you've been telling yourself for all these years. And she's going to tell you, or tell us in the show today, that there are some limiting beliefs in that potentially. And so we're going to uncover her journey. I want to talk about her superpowers, which we're going to figure out exactly what that is, and some of the philosophies and personal beliefs that have guided her to help some of the world's most impactful individuals. And by the end of this episode, it's my hope that you're going to walk away with some powerful insights, some actionable takeaways that you can actually apply in your own life today and make sense of it and actually materialize something. So it's not just telling you something. We're going to show you what someone has already done, and then we're going to give you some tools to step into your own power. So settle in. This is going to be an episode much more about business. It's about discovering the alignment between who you are and how you lead. Before we jump in, don't forget to like, follow, and share this podcast. And if you're curious about uncovering your unique brand messaging blueprint, please visit me on thebrandstoryteller.com, where I will gladly sit down with you and learn a little bit more about what you're doing and how you are showing up in the world and help you connect your dots and your personal and professional stories and your values to create a brand that truly resonates. So anyhow, without further ado, I'm going to bring Hillary into the show, and we are going to get into the heart and matter of this conversation. Welcome, Hillary Porta, to the Branding Laboratory. We had a bit of a wrinkles on the first scheduled event, but it's good to see you here. And finally, we made it and looking forward to this conversation with you.
Absolutely. I've been just waiting with bated breath for this. So it's, thanks for the grace given.
You honor me with your statements, but I'm sure you have bigger and better things to do. But nonetheless, I'm glad you're here with me today. All right. Well, like every show, I just like to start at the beginning and just sort of understand your origin story and kind of learn a little bit more about you and who you are and why you're doing what you're doing today. So if you don't mind, just sort of share with us. You are a powerhouse, magnanimous coach that is working with celebrities, and I saw some elite military personnel and Fortune 500 CEOs and all those sorts of things. Have you always been in this space? Or just tell me, if you could, just take me 30,000 feet. How did you get from where you were to where you are today? What's your origin story?
I've had my own private practice for about 16 years now. And prior to that, I was in the corporate arena, right? I kind of cut my teeth doing management consulting in the financial services arena. And, you know, doing that, you just, gosh, you bounce around, you learn a whole bunch of things. I've gotten to travel all over the world doing it. And it's been just an absolute blast. I call myself a corporate refugee now. You know, everybody laughs about that, but it's really the truth. And so, you know, for gosh, how did I start? I really, to be quite transparent here, I started it because I went through a really high conflict divorce, messy in all which ways. And because of that, you know, I really wanted to still be there for my children. Obviously, at that time, they were much, much younger. And, you know, I just wanted it to be seamless. I still wanted to be able to be there throughout the day for them and things like that. So I felt like, hey, let's just start my own consulting, you know, boutique consulting and strategy firm. And I did. And it's just been, you know, kind of, it's been expanding and evolving, you know, all throughout the years, of course. And, you know, I've really gotten to do some amazing, fun things. So it really started from that. And it's just exploded. And, you know, I've gotten, I guess, what, three companies now under my belt. And, you know, I love it. I get to help, what, six, seven, eight figures, businesses, and, you know, help them harmonize the organizational culture. I get to save marriages. I get to rewire all kinds of genetic imprints that keep people playing small. I create a lot of legacy for people. So I really, like I said, I guess my biggest thing is I get to, at this point, have a, you know, that walking in that sacred space with people.
Well, that's a lot of things to unpack that you just said, recoding genetic imprints, saving marriages, three companies under your belt, starting a company from scratch, resulting from the culmination of a high conflict divorce. I resonate with almost every one of those aspects, including the divorce. I got on my own trajectory and journey after divorce. So
100%.
Yeah, it's mind boggling to me. Not mind boggling. I understand it. It's fascinating to me, this whole idea of marriage and marriage to life, marriage to our companies, marriage to a partner, and sort of like how we invest all of these resources of our own into this, which at the time we thought it was the best idea, working with whatever information we had at our disposal. But sometimes it isn't, and sometimes it doesn't work. And the same thing with business, right? And so you mentioned at the outset your life was a squiggly trajectory. So has mine. I imagine most people who are nominally successful all the way up to the top tier would say the same thing. What is it about, you can call it experience, I don't know really what it is, the maturation of your own time and wisdom, but what is it about early in the days when we make these decisions to marry somebody or start these businesses that don't work out and all these things? And some people recover from it and go on to have these renaissance lives, these renaissance
right.
events. And some people never recover. If you know, truly, like some people just don't.
No, I do. They get stuck and they stay stuck. And I've seen it a lot.
Is there one single determining factor that you've seen in your experience from people who have suffered a serious amount of setbacks, failures, whatever it is, and recover versus the ones who do not?
You know, the biggest thing that I really see, Devo, is that people fall into, right? They fall into in love, right? They fall into going to school and all these obligations and expectations. So they fall into getting a obligatory, you know, career. They fall into marriage. They fall into having kids. They fall into the holy shit, is this it moment, you know, and just crisis happens. And when I keep saying fall into, they do. They never, this has just been my experience, right, is that they never intentionally design an architect. That's one of the reasons I call myself a life architect and kind of a business strategist, is because really no one spends the time, and we're not taught to really design with intention how we want to live, who we want to marry or partner up with, or from a business and a personal standpoint. You know, no one ever teaches us, hey, let's kind of slow the roll here and let's look at the long game. What do you really want? Right? What do you want it to look like? You know, who are these people that you want to get involved with? Right? From a character standpoint, from their vision standpoint, from their work ethic. I mean, all of this. So what I have seen, like I said, is that people just fall into, just kind of sleepwalk through it all. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they're like, what the hell is this?
We hear a lot of people talking about the matriculation of sort of this idea of going through the process as an inevitable necessary evil, if you will, right?
Kind of the rite of passage.
Yeah. But at the same time, when you look at it, it's like, why does it have to be so fucking painful, right? Like, why do we have to do all of this misery?
Yeah,
right. And so, but we know on the other side of that, there's potential and opportunity that we just haven't yet remembered, right? But at the same time, you know, we're over here. So it's like this yin and this yang. And I always wonder, you know, because my life has been a bit of a roller coaster, a very turbulent early part of my career, grew up very abusive background and whatnot. And then I look at who I am today and I feel like I feel pretty proud of who I am today. I feel pretty
accomplished.
I feel pretty accomplished. I'm nowhere near what I really ultimately want to do. But again, I've sort of just embraced the journey.
Hey, it's the journey. Man, yeah, it's all about it.
But my question to you in your infinite wisdom is, you know, while it may be necessary, could it have been fast-tracked, like, had we had mentors early in the day? Had we had parents who actually took the time to educate us on the things that really matter? I don't know if yours did. Mine didn't. Is it worse that they didn't because we had to go through the journey anyway? Because the only way we would have gotten to where we are today is having had that experience in the first place. So I'm like, would I have wanted to fast track that? Would I have wanted to make that more efficient? Or was it really necessary for me to go through this turbulence so that I could experience all that in the first place? Like, I always sort of struggle with that concept. You follow me?
No, I follow you. You know, and it creates a lot of cognitive dissonance, really, if you think about it. I mean, you're just like, it's a brain fry. But the truth of it is, and this is just my perspective only, is number one, you've got to have a little contrast so you can deeply appreciate and gain deeper clarity of what you want. Because I don't know about you, but what I thought I wanted at 18, hellfire, I'm really grateful that not all of that came to, you know, manifestation, right? Completely. But, you know, you ask if we could fast track it. God, there's been so many times, you know, I laugh and I use this analogy because I think you're going to get it because I think you feel the same way. Sometimes I feel like I'm in this Ferrari, right? This like powerful beast of a, you know, car. And I'm like on this country road that's really zigzag and I just can't wait to gun it, right? Because I got so much horsepower. But then there's this farmer on a tractor right in front of my ass. And, you know, yet I can't gun it around because I don't know the road well enough. And I don't know if it's going to have this massive turn over here. And I'm going to go off the side of a cliff. So I can't gun it. So I'm like, vroom, 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 let's go, let's go, let's go. Right. And I use that analogy because, you know, truthfully, there's a lot of things I really wanted to fast track. And now, looking back on it, I am grateful for the contrast, even though I call it heavenly sandpaper and it just, you know, it chafes the living shit out of you. The truth is that I don't think that I would have been as deepened. Does that make sense whatsoever?
Perfect sense.
Yeah. I don't think that I could have got it without experiencing that contrast. It's kind of like, would you know if it was always sunny, like, you know, sometimes in Alaska, right? You know, it depends on what season. Would you know what nighttime and looking at the stars is like if it was always sunny?
So if you could, in the ethos of the movie The Matrix,
which is really like a documentary to me, 100%. You know, in the first place. Yeah.
So if you could plug in and download how to become a jiu-jitsu expert, or download how to do all the things like they show in the movie, would you take that opportunity, or would you want to sort of learn it the old-fashioned way and go through the process?
You know, there's one side of me that says, hell yes, give me that, you know, immediately, because I want to be able to do that. And yeah, but at the same time, I think there's value to be had in some of the experience. Now, granted, you and I have had some similar childhood experiences, and they were rough. They were, I mean, literally, they was, you know, very defining. And I really wouldn't have wished them on anybody, right? But at the same time, again, they've kind of allowed me to have that deepening. Now, you ask if it could be like in The Matrix, if we could just download, right? I don't know if you could actually download all the wisdom that comes from kind of the getting those, you know, you touch, when you're a child, if you touch the oven, dang, even though your parents say you not to, you're like, oh, got to, it burned you, right? And then you learn not to do that again. So I don't know. I mean, that's a really, really good question. And on certain days, I'd be like, oh, hell yeah, bring it on. But then on another day, I'm like, wait a minute, then I might have lost something very valuable in the process. So I wish that we could have it both ways.
Well, you can't. And for this next question, you have to pick something that you would download. What would you download? If you had to choose just one aspect to improve upon your life, or whatever it is, whatever you choose, you can download something to make your life better, more knowledgeable, whatever it is. What would you download?
Okay. So I was in another interview just the other day, and somebody asked me, they said, what would you like to do when you grow up? Which I thought was very kind, because, you know, being 57, I thought, I like you. And the reality is immediately it came to me that I want to be a fairy godmother. So if I could have anything just downloaded in an instant, you know, instant everything, I would have billions of dollars so I could be that fairy godmother.
You don't strike me, and when I first met you, and I don't take this as any insult, it's just an
observation.
You didn't strike me as someone who was as deep and as what's the word I'm looking for? Resonant in terms of being a business coach. It's like when you see somebody, and this is not a statement of fact, but I often find that you sort of make judgments on a physical observation.
Book by its cover.
Yeah, and we're all doing it. Sure. We're all guilty of it. Which is the point of having a show like this, so that we can actually get to know you. But when you first meet people, you sort of like create this persona in your mind of who they might be, what they might sound like. You certainly don't sound like how I expect you to sound like, etc. In terms of people that you work with, because you work with some high-profile, high-performing individuals, and I don't know if they have any context for you, or if they get to watch videos of you, or whatever it is. But when you first meet people, because I work with similar type of people, maybe not as high-performing as yours, perhaps, but I meet people sometimes, and these are high-performing individuals who are like robust schedules, got a lot of things to do. They just want immediate results. They're just looking for answers. They need to unpack this, unpack that. They're like chasing squirrels all over the place. And it's really difficult sometimes to corral them and bring them in. And based upon that whole idea of like, people have this preconceived notion of things, and then they see people and they're like, well, that's not exactly what I expected. When you encounter, and for the first time, people of this magnitude and these celebrities and these military people that I read about on you, is there sort of like an observational impact when you first collide with these people, and people have like statements, or like, I'm just curious, just on a personal level.
Can I just detour for just 1 second? Because I want to tell you a story I think that you'll appreciate deeply.
For sure, yeah.
And it goes along with this. That's why I wanted to tell it to you. So again, speaking Southern, right? I was hired by an organization to go up. I was in New York, and they were having a lot of trouble with one of their really star players. And oh my goodness, I mean, we're talking, he was a diva. And when I say a real diva, he was the kind that would take his helicopter to the Hamptons on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah,
this is the level we're talking about, who had just absolutely destroyed about 12 administrative assistants over the period of 2 months, and just horrible person. I'm just nasty, you know what I mean? Just an asshole. And so they said, hey, we want you to go up there, assess the situation, and make the judgment call, and, you know, we'll do whatever you suggest. And I thought, oh God, this is going to be a fun day, right? So they fly me up, and I get there a little early, and And I had been to their, to their corporate headquarters before, so a few people knew me. And so I was, saying hey and stuff like that. So I, tell them who I'm here to see, and they were all like, immediately get this look on their face, and then they point in there. They're like, he's in the conference room. I'm like, was it? Is there a conference? Is he in a meeting? Or I could just go ahead and start some having some conversation initially. And they're like, no, he's just, I think, shooting the shit with, somebody, one of his friends and their colleagues. And I said, okay. So imagine, New York City, amazing conference room overlooking the city, I mean, all glass, it's gorgeous. Sky leaning way back in his chair, all swanky, and all that kind of jazz, right? I go in to introduce myself, and he says, it's about fucking time. And I was like, okay, I'll play along, right? In my mind, I'm like, ah. And he said, God, we just can't keep you all. Y'all are just go get my fucking coffee.
What?
And that told me a lot right there, Absolutely. And he said, oh, by the way, as I was walking out the door to go get his fucking coffee, he says, there's some bumfuck girl coming up from North Carolina. I don't know what the hell she wants, but anyway, yeah. Can just let me know when she gets here. I went, sure thing. So, people were walking by the conference room. They're like, oh God, I don't know what's going on. I'm feeling nervous. Everybody's got the like. And so I go to the coffee machine. They're like, what are you doing? Oh my God, let me make it for you. And I'm like, oh no, I'm happy to. And just said, hey, kind of give me a little lowdown, And so I. Water cooler talk, man, right? It's all about, again, developing relationships, having that kind of the gift of really seeing people and hearing people and being present with people. They open up to you. And so I got so much information within 15 minutes that I was making this cup of coffee. And so by the time that I brought it back, I thought, let me just kind of give him another chance. You know what I'm saying? Let me just kind of go in there again, bring the coffee, and then introduce myself. So I go back in there, and he was just talking very, animatedly, blah blah blah, shooting with another colleague, and at least the other colleague had the respect enough to, at least whenever I entered the room, he straightened up his chair and was not, slouchy and, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, he goes, God, I hope you learn to get my coffee right. He goes, 'cause, oh, you people are so stupid, and I'm like, oh, I was going to give you another chance, but I'm not now. So, and he said, she should be getting here any time. And I said, okay. So I just excused myself because I wanted to hear a little bit more information, right? So I got on, talked to some other people, got on the phone with, the person who had hired me. And I said, hey, man, you got a liability on your hands. Number one, you're lucky you haven't gotten a lawsuit, at all. And he's like, okay, can you just go ahead and fire him? I said, oh my God, yes. How fun. You get to paid to do these fabulous things. And so I went to his office, because he was still lounging around in the conference room. So I went to his office and asked the other administrative and executive assistant. I said, hey, can you get all his personal items only? Leave everything else that's here, just get his personal items. And she's like, shaking like a leaf. And because I mean, like, he's a terror, he's like an emotional terrorist, really, at this point. And so, you would not believe it. And I called security because I had a feeling, how like sometimes you have a feeling. And so I called security and I said, I want you to wait around, around the side because I might need you. And so security came up, kind of hid behind the one partition that no, he couldn't be seen. So I opened up the door. And opened up the door, and he said, "What the fuck do you want?" He goes, "You're interrupting me again." Oh God, this got to be so fun at this point. And I was like, "Well, guess what?" I said, "Hey," and I stuck my hand out. I said, "I'm the bumfuck from North Carolina."
I was hoping that would get reintroduced.
Oh, it did. And he's like, "What?" And just. Oh, he was just such a jackass. And I mean, like, you just want to call his mama on him and say, listen, you need to spank him. It was just awful.
How do people like that get to positions of such authority?
He was, Ivy League. He came from a very wealthy family, and that's why they had hired him initially to bring in some of the, you know, kind of the wealth management stuff, and his contacts, and that's why. But he had behaved so badly that actually he was losing business, you know. So it was, I mean, you know, they were losing money on him right and left anyway. So, oh my goodness, it was crazy. And so after he said, what the fuck, I'm going to have your job. And you don't know who you're talking to. So I actually do. And I said, guess what? You're fired. Mm. And I just smiled so big. And he's like, he threw the chair. Literally, he picked up the chair and threw it. And I said, security. Yep.
Have you followed the trajectory of this dude where he is now?
I know quite a few people up there in the, you know, kind of in that industry up there in the investment, you know, banking and stuff like that. And yeah, he's been blacklisted, which is great. So I don't know what he's doing now.
So you're not that individual in any way, shape or form. What are some of the,
oh gosh, no.
I guess, what are some of the core philosophies that have shaped the trajectory of who you are today in terms of how you treat people and how you lead and how you show up and like how people perceive you? What are some of the things that have made you not this jackass?
Oh, well, that's easy. You know, I grew up and it's really weird. I grew up in a very small town, but in our small town, we were kind of considered middle to upper, maybe. I was presented at the Dogwood Ball. You know, I took debutante classes, things like that. I had a coming out party when I was 16. I mean, you know, had the whole nine yards, that kind of stuff. But, you know, I had a hellion for a brother, literally, when I say that, you know, not to be disrespectful whatsoever. Unfortunately, I mean, he overdosed. And I mean, literally, you would not believe how we had to grow up. I mean, it was just trauma right and left. And so, one thing that we always did, and my daddy was so good at this, he is so good at this, actually, is that he taught me from a very young age that everybody's important. Mm. Everybody. And, you know, I watched him because at 40, he retired from the financial services and became like, you know, a VC. And he bought this big old ginormous farm. And I mean, like 600 some acres, that kind of thing, tenant farmers on it. And he wanted to raise tobacco and, you know, black Angus cattle and just, you know what I mean? Just do it all fun.
Yeah.
And so I got to grow up, you know, riding my horse in the afternoons, you know what I mean? Doing stuff like that. But I saw how he treated people and it was beautiful. I mean, like say for instance, after that, you know, he would actually be involved with it. He wouldn't just go because he loved this stuff. He thought it was fun, right? And so, like, it was time to bale hay. And what was so cool is he allowed me to do it too. And I learned the value of hard-ass work. Let me just tell you, you know, your fingers bleed. I mean, you know, you get calluses and snakes run out of the, you know, the bales of hay at times. And you jump on them and be like, wah! You know, but
I've done a summer of that, by the way.
Okay, so you know what I'm talking about.
The two hooks, you grab them and have to like lumber them up off the truck.
Yes, like I'm like one of the strongest ass women you've probably ever seen. You know,
I spent a whole summer doing that.
Yeah, so you know what it's about. But there's also this camaraderie that you have too with, you know, your fellow, you know, hay balers or whatever you want to call them. But anyway, so at the end of the day, he always paid them, you know, every day, number one. But he always paid them more than what they worked for. Always an extra hour, at least. And he also always brought them back to our house for iced tea.
That's amazing.
And to sit down in there, you know, being filthy, a little stinky, you know, and sit down and have conversation. So he always welcomed. He did. He welcomed people. And he taught me the value of relationship. I mean, there's not like nothing that anybody wouldn't do for my daddy, right? Mm. Because he's just that man. And so, but he taught me those kind of values and he taught me about giving and literally about people who don't have things. Mm. I mean, he taught me, and we went to all kinds of places that one Christmas, I'll never forget it, Devo. One Christmas, we adopted a family and we loaded up, you know, the car. We got to shop for the family and all the different kids and all that kind of stuff like that, which I still do with my kids. I mean, every year we always adopt, you know, we always have. And I'll never stop doing that because it's so fun.
How do you play that out in your professional world? So this kindness, this virtuous, this servitude that you were taught as a child, and now you've carried into this transformational, scientific, pragmatic blend that you do for your clients. How does that play out in your coaching business?
One of my clients who is a multiple seven-figure earner, multiple businesses, which I've helped her build, and I've helped save her marriage multiple times. And now, you know, she has a child and everything. And, you know, it's lonely at the top sometimes, right? And while she was well-known and everybody's got a crazy-ass family story. But, you know, she didn't have a lot of friends, real friends, you know, the kind that will make a meal train for you or whatever. And so, you know, granted, I'm down in her, you know, in North Carolina, she's, you know, up in New York. And so I actually created a meal train for her and then sent it to, you know, a lot of, you know, the people that I knew that she knew. And so she ended up having meals for 2 months as a new mama.
Wow.
And yes. People are like, well, you know, she earned so much money. She could, you know, she could have, you know, hired a chef for all that. That's not about that. It's not. It's about that human connection. It's about the human touch. And so, you know, point in case, you know, the event that we attended.
Yeah.
Right. You know, the founders of that, you know, they have two little babies, you know, one 3 and one barely even, not even 1 yet. And, in conversation, you know, of course, learning that and, you know, having great conversation about it as a just thank you, I actually sent two of my favorite children's books to them.
That's cool.
You know what I'm saying? So it's about really getting to see people and seeing what's important and building that. And so, yeah, granted, I do have, you know, a really, I guess, impressive. Some people would say it's impressive. I say I'm just really blessed to work in all these different arenas. And yeah, it's all about kindness and connection.
How does this kindness and this servitude help build businesses, help save marriages?
For me, it's about cherry picking out of all of everything I know, right? Maybe to give the largest amount of change in the quickest time frame possible, you know, because, you know, time is such a valuable commodity. So I'm a huge respecter of time. But really, you know, what I do is I help people architect a life and a business that is in alignment, number one, with really who they are and what their goals are. And whether that looks like staying in corporate or leaving corporate or creating, you know, a corporation of their own, you know, what have you, you know, it's from literally cradle to grave, you know, I'll walk them through it. And so, when I talk about, and I've touched on a couple of times, like you said about the marriage pieces, I'm not just a coach, you know, as far as like just a business coach.
You said you spent a lot of money on, you know, acquiring skill sets so that you can integrate this with other people's lives. Can I ask, like, some of the modalities that you're using? I've heard several different things, from trauma releasing to therapeutic coaching, specifically so that people who are listening and these words resonate with them, whether they're looking for this or looking for that. What exactly are some of the modalities that you most commonly use?
I'm probably master level in most of these and got probably more certificates and things behind my name than I ever put down. But I am Master Reiki. Yeah, I'm, you know, certified in NLP. I'm certified in the emotion code, certified in Psych K, certified in QTT, RTT, which is rapid transformational, a lot of hypnosis. I am the lightning process. Let's see here. Havening. I mean, you name it. I've probably studied it. Shamanism. I've, you know, been to several countries and, you know, studied under different shamans and things of that nature, because it just, for me, it's really interesting coming from, you know, the South and being involved in like women's ministry. I used to run a women's ministry, and, you know, I became a lot more spiritual and have a different relationship with, you know, kind of God and consciousness and all of that stuff now. And, you know, I think people are missing so many juicy points that are in the Bible, that it's the transforming and renewing of your mind. And there's so much depth to that and truth to that and levels of consciousness that people have not even explored from the church standpoint with that. But it's true. I mean, you know, neuropsychology has been able to prove it. Neuroscience has been able to prove it. And I've studied a lot of that over the last few years. You know, and so it to me, it's really, you have everything that you ever need inside you. Sometimes you might need just somebody to walk alongside you and hold your hand through it, but you do. Everybody does.
You're blending a lot of different modalities here, from spirituality to psychology to neurology to just a bunch of different things. Is there ever sort of a point in which you're working with somebody where you're clearly able to articulate a specific thing that they need, and so you're able to fall back on a specific type of modality? Or are you perpetually, and this is more of a larger question, do you find that some of the best ways to help people are an integration of a lot of different types of things?
Studying all these different modalities has given me, truly, is the ability to take a look at what the story is behind the story that your body is telling me. So what I mean by that, I had the pleasure of coaching a couple of members of the royal family. Now, we're not talking the immediate royal family that's all in the tabloids and things of that nature, but, you know, kind of further, a little bit further removed. And when she would call me and she'd say, oh, SOS, right? And she'd say, I have a migraine. I need to know what's behind it. Right. So I started training her to understand that from a metaphysical reason, there's something going on behind it. And remember that old adage about not tonight, honey, I have a headache.
Wow.
Right. So I'm like, OK, what are you trying to avoid? What's going on that you're trying to avoid? Because your body is giving you signals. Right. And what's going on? So it's making you slow down and it's trying to say hello, hello. I mean, there's all kinds of situations like that I could tell you, you know, you would not even believe. And so because of that, whenever somebody, you know, gives me a very complex situation, you know, I'm able to say, okay, what's going on with your body right now first? Let's talk about what's going on there. And typically, if they're suffering from things that are on the left-hand side of their body, right, then that usually tells me that there's an imbalance, right, or deep wounding or trauma related to a feminine, someone of influence, right, usually a mama, let's just be quite honest, okay, you know, so there's that. And on the right side, of course, it's from, you know, the masculine side. And so, I mean, listen, I have had such crazy cool experiences. I had a surgeon call out of Chicago and he said, I hear you do some really weird shit. And I thought, ooh, this is going to be a kill call. and you know, another, you know, doctor actually in Chicago had, you know, passed my name along, and he had developed a glaucoma in one of his eyes. And he said, hey, man, I've just got to be really transparent with you. You know, that this is going to be a career ender for me if I don't get this fixed. But, you know, I'm going to have to do it on the down low, right? Because, you know, being a surgeon and having glaucoma and having surgery, you know, it's not really, you know, it's not looked at.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm kind of young. And, you know, the truth is I've still got, I got some medical school debt I still got to pay off. And he goes, so can you help me out? And, you know, I'm like, okay, yeah. I said, I'll try. And I said, tell me which eye. And he said, it's my right. I said, well, tell me about your relationship with your daddy. And he's like, you're spooky, you know? And so we started going on, and what was his body was actually saying, you know, how, you know, glaucoma is kind of that cloudiness, you know, over your eye. And so I just said, what are you failing to see? And what are you failing to, I mean, you're literally, it's your body is giving you such signals that there's a lot of trauma that's going on that you really got to address, right?
Neurological trauma or something, says that?
It was like psychological trauma, you know, childhood conditioning and some things of that nature with his dad. It was real interesting, to say the least. And so long story short, after we did our session, thought everything was great. You know, I thought it was wonderful. I mean, he was like, wow, it feels different. You know, that kind of thing.
He has glaucoma. And with your interpretive skills and knowledge that you've acquired, you're able to work with that in some sort of more holistic perspective. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
100%.
From like a shamanistic level?
Absolutely. Huh. Yeah.
You sound like a functional physician in a sense.
Well, yeah.
talk about what your superpower is. What is your superpower?
The superpower truly is that after I died about a year and a half ago,
After you what?
yeah, I died literally.
You
So
can't just drop that into a conversation casually without any context. After I
I
died.
did.
After I died last week
After I
during this
died.
podcast with Devo, I
Yeah,
suddenly
exactly. I'd been traveling and working myself. I just honestly too much, but I've been pushing through a lot. And I mean, I had done like four retreats. I had done one in Cabo, one in, oh my gosh, let's see here.
I
One in
do want to pick your
Cabo.
brain about that. We'll do this offline, but the
Yeah.
retreat stuff, yeah.
Okay. Oh yeah. One in Cabo, one in Sedona. I was doing a leadership,
Love Sedona.
me too, summit in LA, and I was back and forth all over the dang world. It was, like a crazy, 6 months. And I think I was in Costa Rica too, doing one. I can't remember. But anyway, I came back and I was just not feeling the greatest. And after my trip to LA, I felt like I was getting the flu, and I was like, man, this is weird. Because, usually if I get sick or something, I can quickly rewire and whatever. And I was like, whoa, this is just different. And I woke up at about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I heard this voice just as clear as you and I are talking, and it said, it's time to go. You need to go. You got to go to the urgent care. And I was thinking, I'm too tired for that. No, thank you. Right. So I tried to lay back and go to sleep, and it was almost like someone jostled me awake and said, get your ass to the urgent care. And I was thinking, well, my husband is in Daytona at the Rolex Challenge. This is not going to be well. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. I've got my youngest is asleep in, the next room, and he's got school in the morning. I drive myself because I'm thinking, oh, hell, I just probably got the flu and they can give me a shot, right? And then I'll go back and get my child up, and get ready for school and just go on about my day. But oh my gosh, I say, I make it there, I park, I start walking in, and then I go flunk, and I flatline. I'm in the ICU, obviously, and they're trying to get a hold of my husband. And what's amazing is my time of admittance, right, was January 23rd of 2023.
Wow.
And I was admitted at 222. So if you're into numbers and angel numbers
Yeah,
and stuff like
numerology
that,
for sure.
there
Yeah.
we go. Well, the so anyway,
Are do you, is that a modality you also use in your practice,
yeah, well, I just
numerology?
I'm familiar with it, not enough to really, speak to it too much. But
Has anyone ever examined the size of your brain?
oh God, no. Well, I've done some brain mapping stuff, but it's really cool. Just because I'm a geek. But anyway, but seriously, and what was so cool is like this just shows you the love of a mother, right? So, again, I'm dead at this point.
Wait,
Coming
so
back.
okay, now you're on the ground, you're dead, but you're not.
Well,
Are you now aware of yourself being dead?
not yet. And what was really interesting, so I'm just out, out in somewhere, I don't know. And all of a sudden, I jolt awake at 5:55, which is all about new beginnings and, all kinds of really cool stuff if you're into that. And
So you were dead from 2:22 to 5:55.
right, for the first time.
Kind of wrap my head around it. So you died at 2:22. I'm
Yep.
assuming that, they pronounced you dead. They brought you into emergency recovery, like
Yeah,
what
they're
ICU,
trying
what?
to work on me and do all that kind of crazy stuff and, all this stuff. And so then at 5:55, I wake up and immediately open my eyes and I say, here's the code to my phone. Call, Daniel and tell him what's happened. Go get my child because he needs to wake up at 6. And I said, here's my husband's phone number. And I went chunk and went out.
And you died again.
I did.
So you have two
I had
NDEs.
two NDEs right there. Yeah. But this time was really cool because this is the one I really remembered, right? So all of a sudden, I don't know how long, because of course I wasn't paying attention to time other than that just a moment, in time. And then all of a sudden I floated up, literally floated up to the corner of of the ICU room, and I saw my granddaddy, who's like my favoriteest person, when he was alive on the face of earth. He was just wonderful. Those like when you're in elementary school and you get to take a person, your favorite person, to school for lunch, special person's day. So it was my granddaddy I always chose. I just love him. He was wonderful. It was very surreal because I'm watching him work on me, you know, and all kinds of things.
Are you floating in this space? What are you doing?
Yeah,
are you just sort
you're
of,
just
you're, are you
yeah,
just like aware of yourself being there?
you kind of feel floaty, but you're aware. I
Are
don't know.
you a physical?
I don't know. I know that sounds really weird. I didn't even look down to see, you know, if I was physical or not, at that
But
point. I
your
mean,
but yourself,
he showed up as physical.
but as a spiritual, whatever you are, you're aware of everything else in the physical world, but you know that you're
Yes.
not part of the physical world.
Exactly. But
Wow.
what was really so cool was there was all of a sudden there was all these people that were in the room, and then I could see, you know, in an ICU room, you know, you can see there's, you know, the big doors, the big sliding doors and stuff like that. Sometimes they have the curtains over and sometimes they don't. But there was a lot of people that were walking around, and I was like, what is going on here? And I said, this place is busy, man. You know, and he just chuckled and he said, well, these people have already transitioned.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, okay. I'm like, all righty. So that just kind of was a little like,
A
what?
jolt, yeah.
Yeah, it was. And then all of a sudden, I just kind of did this big swirly thing, you know, almost like going down like a fun slide, right? It was just, all the colors were so vibrant, and it was actually amazing. And just the light, I can't even describe it. And what was interesting is, you know, you're talking, but you don't have to talk with your voice. It's
I've heard this, yeah. I've
telekinetically.
heard this, yeah.
Yeah. And it was true. I mean, it was, you know, yeah. So, it's all of your senses are heightened.
You came back
Yes.
again,
Came back. Well,
and
I was given a choice.
but
Yes.
you were self-aware of
Yeah.
this sort of biological evolution of knowledge
Yes,
while you were not
absolutely.
alive, while you were not alive.
Yeah,
And then you were
yeah.
given a choice to come back, and you chose to come back, and then so you came back again. Okay.
Yes. My superpower now, for some odd reason, is that I've been given, I guess maybe that's the better word. After I died, I've been given some more superpowers in that I have a knack for being able to go deep and see the truth. I feel like a keeper of the truth, and I've really gotten into, I guess, over the last 5 years in particular, metaphysics and understanding what, you know, goes on with your body and what goes on, you know, from a metaphysical standpoint. And so my superpower is really, gosh, you know, I guess because I'm obsessed with like human potential and human behavior that is helping to excavate. Maybe that's it. That's right. Okay. So my superpower is really excavating the drivers, and, you know, guiding through the complexities of things to unlock, and so that I can help really people break free, right? So I guess my superpower is specializing in revealing kind of the belief systems and you know, and breaking free of those subconscious shackles. So that would be my superpower.
So one of the things I'm always curious about when I'm just meeting with my clients or just talking to people is, what do people say about you when you're not in the room? And I'm always like fascinated by how people respond to that, because sometimes people have imposter syndrome when they're like very shy about it and they don't really want to answer that. And some people are always like, man, I'm very clear and direct about it. So if what would your friends, your colleagues, people interact with you, what would they say about you when you're not in the room?
Confession, I've actually walked in when, you know, they didn't realize that I was, you know, I was coming into a room one time, and I actually overheard something, and I heard them talking about me. And one of them was a relatively new acquaintance that I had met, so I was very curious to, you know, to hear, you know, kind of their take. And one of them was just a dear soul sister, right? And I overheard them talking, and they said, yeah, you know, one of the things that just immediately struck me was how present she is. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Okay. And then I was just like trying to lean in a little bit more because, again, the voices were getting, you know, they were kind of quiet, and they were like, you know, the things that, you know, I really love how that she's really present, but she's so generous. She goes, she's generous to a fault. And I thought, wow, gosh, this is feeling like you're a little bit at your funeral, right? And you're and you're hearing all these things. But the, you know, I heard that, and then I heard that that she's very humble, and that's why so many people are drawn to her. And I just kind of took that in for a minute, before I bombarded in and said, hey, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to approach this walking in to the scenario, right? But, I just walked in and said, I hear y'all been talking about me. And I just said, I just want to say humbled, how humbled I am at this very moment that y'all were so kind.
If you had to write your epilogue of sort of what people would say about you, what would you hope, outside of being humble and just sort of grounded, when it's all said and done, the mothership is above your house right now and it says, hey,
exactly.
It's time to go home. You have to sort of like share your legacy. What would you hope that people would have felt, seen, heard, touched, etc., when it comes to you, and what you would want them to hope that they would say and feel about you?
That I was a true generational shifter and a freedom fighter. That's truly what I want more than anything, is that help people have freedom, experience that and know what that's like. And that it's very radical, right? Just the true freedom. So we're not talking just time freedom and, financial freedom and emotional freedom. We're just talking about all of it, to be really free.
Can you break that down a little bit, what freedom means to you?
Freedom to be, and what that really means, and what that looks like for me on a daily and a regular basis, is the freedom to design my own days, mm-hmm. right? The freedom to, let's just say this, if I need a little bit more time in the bed, that I can take it, right? I've architected my life to where, I don't have certain commitments at certain times. To me, that is extreme freedom, right? Mm-hmm. That's beautiful. The freedom that I have every day to choose, right? What I'm going to be doing, and the freedom to pivot, and what that looks like too. Like I said, kind of on the granular level, I don't know about you, but let's just say there are some people that are in corporate environments, and I used to be in one. Like I said, I'm a kind of a corporate refugee, but then they wash, rinse, and repeat all the time. They can't take this enormous pivot if they choose to. I mean, they wouldn't have a job. Mm-hmm. And so for me, freedom is, say, for instance, I want to launch a new product, or something's really on my heart, or something like that. I get to. I do it. That to me is freedom. The freedom also that I have because I've done a lot of the deep shadow work. And the freedom lies with that is that I have less and less triggers. And so I get to have freedom emotionally on a daily basis. Right. And that's just a constant, you master, as soon, whenever something comes up, you have a choice of what you want to do with it. And that just comes from discipline, right? And mastery of certain, skill sets. But there's also a freedom to that too. Mm-hmm. So do I have a place in Bali, and do I have a mountain house? Do I have all these things? No, I don't. Have I been there? Not to Bali, but I've been, a lot of different countries all over the world. I love it. I love the freedom to be able to travel. I love the freedom that, I get to take, this wonderful tool that we have, right? Our phone, and I can go anywhere. Mm-hmm. I can do my business with my laptop, right? So that is freedom for me, because I do like to explore, and I like to, see what kind of shenanigans I can get into in a different country at times. So I love that freedom. Now, freedom also, like I said, it comes from a place of peace. And it's also from a lack of judgment, in my opinion. This took me a lot of years, I'm not going to lie, to learn that one. Because, when you are a real judgmental person, really the harshest one that you're judging is yourself, and you're projecting it onto others. And so for me, having the freedom, because we're talking about freedom here, having the freedom to be without judgment, to really take a look at around at both sides and call it like it is, and own whatever piece that it is that's needed to own, and And that's a beautiful thing because you don't have to carry the guilt, the shame.
Does the judgment that you're referencing, are you meaning because it sort of sounds like when you say freedom, you're saying the autonomy to make the choices and not be structured and restricted by the traditional bounds of society. But in addition to that, when people are structured and bound by the traditional structures of society, there might be some sort of emotional tendencies to creep into that jealousy, judgment, et cetera, because you're so caught up in what you don't have.
100%. You know, there's that comparison and that envy. And man, those are just, to me, those are diseases, dis-ease. You know, you're completely at dis-ease with yourself. So I don't have those. I truly don't. Somebody asked me the other day, he said, oh, well, you know, you really need to do a competitive analysis, you know, and this and that. And I was like, okay, hold on a minute. That's assuming that there are competitors. And somebody just looked at me like I was losing my mind. But the truth is it doesn't have to have competition.
Is there a better way to reframe that, though? You don't know what you don't know, and just being aware of stuff of the marketplace, or aware of the people who are doing similar things to you, even if it's nothing else, of just connecting with them to like form a partnership or a collaboration with them. Just like,
yes.
I saw your stuff online. I think it's phenomenal. I'd just love to connect,
yes,
and have coffee with you because I want to pick your brain, right?
100%. And that's different, right? That's
sure.
More just industry research and really, you know, kind of taking a look at, you know, what's out there, you know, that people are doing. And like you said, you know, for a better goal, not to kind of, like I had the situation one time, Devo, that was just, it was not just once, it was three times now, where I had to actually have a cease and desist because someone had actually taken all my verbiage from my website and created their own.
Wow.
Yeah, right? And that's when you feel a little flattered, you know, and then, you know, then you have to ask him to stop, though. So,
that's funny you say that. So I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to do primarily photography many years ago. Primarily wedding photography. I shifted into the more of the business world about, I guess, about 6 years ago now. But anyhow, I had a bride call me. This is like 15, 20 years ago. Because I still own a photography agency here in Charlotte.
What?
Yeah.
So we need to have a session or something because I need some new headshots.
Yeah. Well, let's connect. But yeah, my photography agency, we do photography and videography, and it works,
yes,
in conjunction with the branding, the sort of telling the story, right?
Of course.
But anyhow, I had a bride call me. Her name was Allison. This was like 15 years ago, and she's like, dude, are you selling our photographs on Etsy? And I was like, what are you talking about? So she sent me a screenshot of some mugs that she had found on Etsy, and it had pictures of her and her husband and like all these different photographs that somebody had stolen from my website.
Oh, man.
Literally they took screenshots of it and then were plastering. First of all, I was like, wow, I'm really honored that you would,
yeah,
think, but at the same time, like, I want some royalties on this motherfucker.
I know. I was the same way. I was like, I wonder how many coaching packages you've sold. And I should probably, you know, be, you know, privy to some of that. Now, I'm right there with you. And so, yeah. Whew.
Well, anyhow, so I like your definition of freedom. And again, it's sort of like the autonomy to be able to make the choices that you want when and wherever, however you please. And I think that sort of aligns with where I thought you were going with it. But
yes,
in terms of the business that you do, this life architecture that you are, you have this sort of unique idea of blending science and transformation and sort of connecting with people on a deeper level so that there's meaningful impact in what you do. Was this something you sort of happened onto by accident? Or was this something that you sort of saw a gap and you started matriculating, or was this through experiential? Like, how did you kind of stumble into this space?
I did see a gap. Absolutely. I think I shared this with you after I went through the very high conflict divorce and, you know, kind of, I had the luxury, let me just say, of staying home for a few years, you know, while my children were little. I mean, I still did coaching on the side, you know, executive coaching on the side, kind of called my own hours. But as far as having my own practice and really, you know, needing to get it, I just had the luxury of just doing it part time. And after my high conflict divorce, literally, I was looking around the industry and, you know, taking a look at, again, kind of doing industry research and analysis, and realized that all of these coaches, there's either a life coach or a business coach or a spiritual coach or a relationship coach. And I really started looking at that because, you know, there's so much brilliance out there in the coaching world. I mean, there really is. It's just, it's beautiful to see. And, you know, people using, you know, their strengths and their tenure and their gifts and all of their knowledge that they've, you know, as you say, the maturation process, right? And so I was looking at it though, and I thought, wow, there is not one person that I see that is really addressing all of this. And so thus, you know, H. Porta Coaching and Consulting was, you know, birthed. And so, yeah, so that's really what, you know, why I wanted to fill that gap because, again, no one that I knew of and nowhere out there that I was looking at was addressing all of it. And so,
all of it meaning more of the holistic purview?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I laughed. One of my favorite clients who actually ended up staying with me for 5 years. And I mean, you know, she would take a half a season off and said, oh, nope, need some more growth in some, you know, different areas. And so, you know, it accumulated about 5 years. And, you know, she laughed and she said, oh my gosh, you literally are, you know, you're my marriage coach, my relationship coach. You are my business coach. You are my personal growth, my spiritual coach. And she said, and now you're my parenting coach. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just never realized I could have it all in one place because she had been outsourcing all of mm-hmm. them. And it's really challenging to do that because if you've got all these different coaches, you know, that you're having to keep up to speed with what you're doing, where you're going, what, you know, all of this kind of things of that nature and where you're wanting to get to, you're hearing a lot of different voices, number one. And they're only looking at that one perspective versus looking at all of it. And I think that that's really, really important to do. As somebody that can be in that foxhole, I always laugh and say I'm like that, you know, in the foxhole kind of girl. But really helping you manage the space between the space and all of the arenas, because you just like, you know, you and I both know that whatever is going on personally is going to mirror in your business, you know, and it the same thing. I mean, you know, everything, it's a mirror effect. And so you have to really understand those, you know, those concepts and the kind of the spiritual laws along with everything. Mm. So, you know, you can throw a formulaic approach to anything,
yeah.
But that's just what you're going to get. It's not going to be custom tailored to you and your family and your relationships and whatnot.
So in terms of that reflection where, no pun intended, that everything is a reflection of yourself, how do you manage yourself in that regard? So do you have a coach? Do you have a therapist? Like who is your accountability partner, if you will? Who is your life architect, if you will, in terms of keeping, because, you know, we're all good at helping. Everyone's really good at helping other people. And I'm guilty of this.
Yes.
Like, I'm really good at sort of seeing the big picture. I'm really good at sort of identifying gaps and targets and like projections and all these things. Like you can have a 5-minute conversation with me. And if you ask them for my opinion, I'll be able to really quickly identify things that you could improve
right.
upon that. Right. But then I look at my own self sometimes and like sometimes I struggle with just like basic things. And it's like we can't get out of our own way. Right. And so that's why I have a coach and that's why I have a therapist. Well, I don't have a coach right now, but I did. I'm still searching for one.
Right.
I sort of outgrew my existing capacity, and that sort of happens. That's a different conversation.
Does happen, and that's a very real thing. I mean, you know, sometimes what got you here won't get you there.
100%. 100%. So I'm sort of looking for that, and that's a separate conversation. We can have that offline. But anyhow,
sure.
In terms of Hillary, the life architect, this space that you operate, it's a lot of high pressure stakes because you're sort of mm-hmm. you're enabling people to not have to outsource their freedom, you're helping them sort of find that. So
absolutely.
how do you keep yourself sane and on target and in your blueprint and your North Star and all those fun things?
Well, okay, you did ask me, you know, do I have a coach? I have someone who is, I guess you would say they're a coach and confidant who I trust with everything to where they can hold up a mirror to me if, you know, they have no hesitation. And so, you know, for me, it's iron sharpens iron. I really look for people that can strengthen me. And, you know, really, because I think that's so important, you know, to expand your thinking, to really become a master thinker. You know, that's one of the things that's really super important. But I also have a lot of frameworks that, of course, that I use within my coaching practice that are really pretty damn amazing, if I will say so myself, that I've kind of developed over the years of just doing this, you know, for a really long time, and what's worked, what doesn't work. So I actually, you know, I field test on myself to make sure that it's something that I would, you know, I would adopt, number one, that's really going to push me from a high performance standpoint and elite, you know, kind of a, become an elite performer and a master thinker. And with that, because, you know, time is a commodity. It really is. And even though time is just a construct here on here, the way we play here on Earth, right? You know, we still have some constraints. And so with that, you know, you want to optimize and, you know, really harness the, you know, what you've got. And so with that, like I said, I've just created over the years just a bunch of different frameworks that I use personally, which really helps me ground and anchor in. So I don't have the fuzzy days or the, you know, the extreme days, right? Either really high or really low, or, you know, I'm just like, I'm kind of even keel, you know. At the same time, I'm very passionate about things. Don't get me wrong, you know, and all of that. And I can cry at a commercial if I have to. But, you know, I've learned how to do that. If that makes any sense,
it makes a lot of sense. It's actually really impressive, to be honest with you, that you can police yourself and sort of make sure that you're staying on target with yourself. Because I don't think a lot of people can do that. Maybe that's
years.
Your superpower, which I'm sort of trying to get at. Like, what is your superpower? If you had this sort of, and I know you have many, it sounds like, actually it not sounds like, I know, but if you had to sort of encapsulate your key strengths and gift to the planet, things that you do effortlessly that other people find extremely difficult, like policing yourself, what would you sort of say your superpower is?
Being a keeper of the truth. And I know that that's probably like you have to speak to some.
When you're doing these sort of truth-telling exercises, and
right.
I would imagine, again, I'm not a psychotherapist, but I would imagine that you have to sort of tap into the subconscious level in order to change this paradigm, whether it's Amazon packages or childhood trauma or whatever it is. There's sort of these layers that build up. So how do you deconstruct that by tapping, by using your superpower, this truth-telling superpower? How are you tapping into the subconscious to rewire that so that you can unlock your clients or the people you interact with's truest potential so they can be their truth, tell their truth, et cetera? How does that process work?
Truthfully, you tap into someone's energy using a set of protocols that I learned, you know, like I said, over the years. And at first, I remember when I had first learned them, it was really kind of cute, right? When you first learn something and you're unsure and you're like trying to make sure you're following the protocols and this and that. And you don't even realize that you just need to go with your intuition.
Yeah.
You need to just call in your intuition and the kind of the super conscious. And, you know, some people have different names for it, you know. Spirit, universe, God, you know, some people call it Buddha, whatever. I don't really care. Whatever you want to name that is your superconscious. And so I get to tap in to their superconscious only if it's safe and appropriate. Now, I've had situations where I've tried to tap into someone's energy and it was not safe and appropriate for me or for them.
Oh, wow.
And so, I mean, I got a big hold the hell on and I'm like, okay. I'm like, so that's just not something that, you know, it's a good time to do right now. So, yeah. But I want to say this, okay, because I'm not a real big fan of, gurus and all these other people and influencers. No. If anybody says, oh, I can heal you, you need to run the hell away, like as fast as you can, like Forrest Gump. I mean, seriously, because nobody else can heal you but you.
So what would you say? What's your marketing mantra to in lieu of that?
Well, I mean, I guess get to walk alongside others, you know, and kind of be a field guide, per se, you know, as they're healing themselves. I mean, like you said earlier, you don't know what you don't know, what you don't know, right? And so I, with what I do know, get to help them walk along and actually heal themselves.
I suspect a large part of coaching, if I'm being honest, because I'm now doing some coaching in a manner of speaking for my clients.
Right. Well, I'm sure.
That it's not so much, at least this is my observation, it's not that I necessarily know better per se, because you're probably a lot more talented than me as an executive in your field. I certainly don't know your business. I don't know the craft that you've spent masterfully numbers of hours on perfecting and all these sorts of things. And it's not that I'm going to come in and say, hey, let me show you the best way to do this because I'm your guru. I sort of see it as like I'm an outside onlooker with a fresh perspective that it hasn't been biased by all of the contextual learnings and skills and all these things. And
absolutely.
I'm going to call it like I see it and at least give you my outside perspective. And we'll learn together whether this is going to be the most effective. I'm sort of like, I see it as like more a collaborative partnership with a different, cleaner set of eyes that's not bogged down by the minutiae that you sort of have been swirling around in for so many years. Does that make sense?
Well, that's, you said it beautifully. I mean, you know, on my website, even it says, you know, I'm a spotter, you know, truly, I am a spotter, you know, not only in motorsports, which I have been able to do, but at the same time, you know, I truly am just like you with your coaching as well. You get to be objective. And that is right there is just, that is the key. That is so critical for you to have, you know, the non-judgmental objectivity to where you can really help pull it apart because you're not emotionally attached to it.
I love that. Do you think that this skill that you have, I know you have a massive amount of experience and learned behaviors and modalities and all these different things that you bring to the table. But I often wonder for people who are truly gifted at this, there's learned behaviors, but there's also an innate aspect to it that somehow or other you were just gifted by the universe with this ability. And I don't really know what that is. I sort of get torn between everybody has this, but I'm just going to be honest with you. I've met some people right now who just haven't figured that out yet. And no, you don't fall into the everybody yet. I don't mean that to be judgmental, but you know, some people are further along in their development than others. So
well, yeah, absolutely.
And, so there's an innate piece to this, right?
Yes, there is.
Why do some people have the gift? Why do some people seem more enlightened? And I'm not talking about the people who self-profess. I'm talking about there are truly people on this planet. And I'm reading this phenomenal book again for the first time in like 15 years, Conversations with God by Neil Donald Walsh.
Oh, I love that.
I love this book. And he talks about these.
And I've read it many times too. And you know, it's really beautiful because each time I read it, I pick up a different salient point from a different perspective. And I'm like, why did I not get it this time?
Because your contextual paradigm has leveled up. Yeah.
Well, your level of consciousness. You here's what's so interesting. You're only able to function in the level of consciousness that you live.
That's why Buddha said when the student is ready, the messenger will arrive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But it still begs to question. And this is, we're going to go a little bit esoteric weird here. So it still begs to question.
You know, I love that stuff, man. I'm just like all over it.
It still begs to question for me. And this is just like sort of like my perpetual quest to better understand. Are there people that are just not from here, that live here, that have this gift, that have been sent here, whatever you want to call it, that are messengers for the greater good? And I'm not trying to go woo-woo. I'm not trying to go God here. I just genuinely wonder because I encounter these people. I've encountered these types of people somewhat regularly where I'm just like, there's no way in hell that you operated and grew up in the same context that everyone else did. Like, you're just from a different quantum field, we'll call it.
You're different. Yeah. Okay. So – Yes. You know, even in the Bible, right, it talks about we are aliens in our own land, strangers in our own land. You know, yeah, I do believe that. I mean, it talks even, like I said, going back and referencing the Bible, you know, the Nephilim. And I mean, where the hell were they from? Right. Like, it's so arrogant for us to believe that, you know, we're the only ones in the planet. you know, planets, period, and solar system and everything else. I just think that there are other beings, there are other life forces, there are other things that, you know now, of course, which is so absolutely hysterical, you know, that the government is actually admitting, you know, that they're UFOs. Please, really? I know.
I always make that analogy. It's no different than parenting. Like, people who find it difficult to understand that their own government would keep stuff from them. It's like, are you a parent? You don't share literally everything with your children, do you? Like, you sort of like you're going to filter stuff because you know it may or may not be for their best understanding to have that knowledge just yet. I don't personally parent that way per se. I've sort of always been very autonomous, very open with my children, sort of like, let's have
more
a conversation.
Of a conscious, more of a conscious parent, you know, but, and really understanding that these are people too. They're not just you don't just own them.
Yeah.
You know,
or if you're a boss, like, there might be some things that you're just not necessarily going to share with your employees because it just isn't in the greater good. So it's not far reaching for me to think, well, on a macro micro level, like, we're all doing the same thing on a regular basis. Like, why would it be so astounding to find out that you've had information kept from you? It's like, come on, man, like, be realistic here. Anyway, switching gears. I love your honesty. Thank you. And I love your perspective. Sure. You and I are very much in alignment on a variety of things. And I'm scared to get together with you in person because I imagine it'd probably be like, we probably need like a week away somewhere where we can just talk about and postulate on things. But
I know.
In terms of gifts,
yes.
You know, the universe operates on this whole idea of polarity, right? And so with every strength comes its own challenges, right? It's impossible to not, because through those challenges, we grow and gain, right? So when you take a look at sort of the reflection of your life, do you have current blind spots, or have you had current blind spots that you were maybe blissfully unaware of, but somehow came into sort of acknowledgement of them and then solved that problem and sort of helping you become a better version of yourself in that process?
Oh, 100%. I believe that we all have blind spots. That's why it's really so important to have somebody walk alongside you, right? And I'll keep going back to this because it's really true about iron sharpens iron. You know, really, it is. And so, yeah, do I have I think what I feel most excited about, this is so crazy. Because it was so funny, I was writing, you know, kind of an email campaigns and, you know how to do. and it was really one was, it was just recently written about count it all for joy, right? And, you know, that's a really big Bible verse, you know, and you can break it down to a lot of different things. But really, I've gotten to that stage where I actually count it for joy whenever I get a trigger or I get something, because I'm like, oh, next level of freedom, you know? And so it's really exciting for me. So whenever I'm either blind, you know, I have a blind spot and something triggers it, I'm immediately like, oh, okay, let's just dissect this. It's exciting. But the very first thing I do is give it thanks, right? And I break down that resistance to learning what it's really about. Because, you know, most of the times whenever we have a trigger, it's usually something, you know, a little or a lot painful, and it's calling for you to, you know, acknowledge it and really take a look at it, circle around it, you know, and figure it out and then release it and let it go. And so, yeah, I mean, again, I think everybody has got blind spots. You don't know what you don't know. And as I get older, that's why I said, I think I've dropped that whole judgment piece, because gosh, I would hate to be judged just about one season of my life versus in totality, because I think I've morphed into so many different people over my lifetime, you know, just in 57 years. I can only imagine how much more I'm going to morph, right?
That's sometimes easy for enlightened people like yourself to sort of be able to understand that blind spot is actually an opportunity, right?
Oh, it's good.
Right? Yeah, it's good for you, but not everybody has that understanding and that self-awareness.
Right.
So
yeah.
Are there some tactical things that you could share with our audience in terms of you're rubbing up against something that just isn't working out optimally for you right now? Whatever that may be, whether you're a college student or you're a business owner or you're struggling with your marriage or divorce, whatever's going on, we all have these challenges that exist on a regular basis, right? And so I'm curious if you have any tactical strategies to help people better understand this woo-woo idea of polarity. Like, you need the challenges in order to grow. And sometimes that's easy to say, but like when you're in the midst of the fog and the muck, it's like, bro,
what the fuck
am I going to do right now? Is there anything that you could say that's sort of like, hey, here's some quick and easy strategies or snippets of things that I've learned that you could share with us?
Yeah, I'm happy to. It's going to be probably a little unpopular, though, but that's all right. That's who I am.
This is not a popularity contest podcast, so.
This is so good. So the very first thing that I've learned.
You answer that question, that's really true. I actually had somebody send me a recommendation on how to make my podcast better, and I appreciate your recommendation. But they literally said you should stop talking about so many challenging topics and just go more mainstream. And I was like, I really appreciate the feedback, but that's just not what we're ever going to do. I don't want to have basic nonsense conversations.
Do you think Joe Rogan would do that?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings about Joe Rogan. I wonder how authentic Joe Rogan actually is. But let's continue that conversation separately. Anyhow,
okay. Yes.
back to you. Solutions, tactical.
Yeah. I mean, what I've learned the hard way. Okay. Let me explain how I maybe used to be 15, 20 years ago. Whenever something would happen, I would become hysterical. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, just the screaming and the crying and, you know, whatever, but mentally hysterical inside, you know, feel desperate, fearful, you know, all of the kind of stuff that, you know, comes along with something being triggered. And I didn't know what to do with that. I didn't have the skills, you know, needed to get out of that state, because that's really what it is. It's a state of being. And as I've learned, one of the best things that you can do when you get triggered or when something happens, you know, that's traumatic or aggravating or frustrating, the very first thing you can do, and you can't go wrong by doing this, is to be still. And let me tell you something. That is just the antithesis of what our culture promotes, you know, in our nanosecond culture, right? But you have to be still. Okay. You know, there's a reason. It's really interesting.
Instead of filling yourself up with distractions or continuing down the same.
I mean, you got to put the fire out, right? How do you put the fire out? You throw cold water on it, you know, or you've got to get that, you know, that fuse from going all the way so you don't explode. So the very first thing you need to do is you just need to be quiet. One of the things I've found that has been really beneficial for myself and my clients is also breath work, right? You know, because it does, you know, it totally clears out the cobwebs, as I call it, but it's beautiful because, you know, it really changes the state. And then after that, you know, again, kind of go get still, get in tune, getting tapped in with your breathing. Okay. And then there's a series of, obviously, questions that you can ask yourself, right? I think that's very important. Number one would be, wow, what was this response about? You know, what was my response to, you know, X, Y, Z about? What was it
mean,
really
You mean in terms of what was the trigger? You mean like what really was going on?
What was really going on here? You know, if I can take myself out of it, it was, say, for instance, it was a dear friend or a client that was going through that, right? Kind of put it in third person. What would it look like to you? Right? Kind of like a situational analysis. Have you ever done that?
I have, yeah.
Okay, I love situational analysis. It's a great, you know, framework and a tool. But, you know, you look at the situation, and then after the situation, you're like, okay, who did it impact and how? And what could be a solution, right? So when you become still and do a little breath work and you can calm your, you know, nervous system down, then you have the ability to really take a look at it and circle around it. And with an objection, you know, an objectivity that allows you to actually take a look and see it on a different layer, because there's always layers underneath. I mean, you know, It's definitely not going to be on the subcutaneous one, I can promise you. So it goes deep usually. And so then you can start peeling them back. And, you know, it's really interesting. What I've noticed most that, you know, from working with thousands of people with this, is that it almost always boils down to fear and shame. And that's what produces, you know, the anger and the guilt. It's really interesting.
Speaking of fear, that's one of my biggest takeaways from that book we just mentioned a few minutes ago, Conversations with God, as he talks about there's really only two dichotomies. There's love and there's fear. And every single choice you make is based upon one of those two options.
100%.
Like literally everything that is negative or dark or anxiety driven or jealousy or judgment, that's on the fear category. Anything that's from a point of kindness and compassion and tolerance and whatever, it's from the love side. So we always have this opportunity to recreate our lives or create our lives, if you will, from fear or from love. And you know, like scarcity, for example, that's a fear paradigm. And those are things that I never really understood. So if you've not read the book, for anybody listening, it's called Conversations with God. And I will tell you this book, you'll love this, Hillary. You know, I got divorced, I guess now 15 years ago, or I guess about now.
And, yeah, me too. Yep.
And I was on, and I didn't know it, unbeknownst to me, I was on a trajectory of just sort of, I don't even know what that would be called. I was living the American dream, if you will, just doing the nonsensical things that had no purpose or meaning. And it was actually that book. And I think I connected with Christine Lang, didn't I?
We're actually supposed to get together, you know, I think in the next week or so.
She's the one who turned me on to that book.
That book is fantastic. Like I said, it's to me kind of like what I call my reference Bibles, you know, literally.
Phenomenal
it's really
book.
Good. Yeah, it is.
So this whole idea of fear and love and all these sorts of things, are these and these being the stillness and this mindfulness and all these different practices that you're sort of using in your life and use with your clients, are there micro versions of that you use on a daily basis in your life that help you maintain your own clarity, your own focus, your own sort of like North Star? Are there things that you do on a daily basis, no matter what, hell or high water, I'm going to make sure that I do this, whether it's breath work, whether it's mindfulness practices, yada, yada, yada?
Absolutely. My feet don't touch the ground, right, as they say, you know, in the morning until I've actually meditated and, you know, had my gratitude practice, period. They just don't. I have a series of questions that I kind of go through, you know. I used to write them down, you know, had big journals and write them down, and it was beautiful. But now I've done it so many years that, you know, you just kind of, you flow. You get in flow with them. And, you know, and there are some in the morning and some in the evening that I do. And that actually, that allows for you to have kind of bumper pads, as I call it, right? So you don't go in the gutter, truthfully. Because, I mean, if you think about it, there's two states of being, right? There's kind of this powerful state of being or there's primal state of being. Are you familiar?
I am.
And so, well, you know, okay, like the love and the hate, right? You are only primarily in one state, you know, at a time, mm-hmm. right? You can't have hope and then have anxiety, mm-hmm. right? It's really hard to have peace and then have anger, I mean, at the same time. So you're going to be primarily in one or the other. And so I think that it's really important to find out where you spend the most of your time, in which state, whether it's a primal state or if it's a powerful state, right? Because your higher self, that's where your passion, your inspiration, that's where your vitality and your confidence, your courage, your curiosity, the celebration, all of it, that's a powerful state. That's your parasympathetic nervous system. And then your primal state, if you think about it, that's overwhelm and disappointment and impatience and envy and jealousy and sadness and worry and anger and overwhelm. Whew. And anxiety, you know, so you have to figure out where you lie. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And how you're bent, mm-hmm. right? You know, based on conditioning and based on experiences and things of that nature. And I think that that's the thing, is so many people work so hard on the self-concept. And to me, I see so much abuse in this. It's like a personal development hangover. You know, people always want to fix what's wrong with them and all that kind of stuff like that. And, you know, they think it's so noble to do that kind of work. Well, I think the most noble work is to learn yourself, number one. And, you know, I think it's really important. It's so funny. I always make my clients, my private clients, do a SWOT, right? And, you know, make them do it on a personal standpoint, not just a business. Because like I said, you know, I do a business and, you know, professional and personal. And no one really ever does a SWOT for themselves on a personal level. And so, you know, instead of using the word weakness, because SWOT, for those of you who are not familiar, it's, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. In other words, you know, the threats are the things that make you go sideways.
I used to do that for a living.
Yes.
Okay. SWOT. So no, I used to literally work with clients on process improvement. So I'm a former Six Sigma ninja.
Me too.
Yeah. So I used to do SWOT exercises.
I was
all
a black
time.
Belt. Yep. Same thing. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm a geek, man. I'm a nerd. I actually even studied under Deming, if you can believe it. So yeah, the father of it.
You have a lot of different layers of things that we're unpacking in this podcast.
Yeah, it's just fun though. But you know, at the same time, you know, you look at that and knowledge is really, it is power, because, you know, once you understand that, the biggest thing, that the most radical thing you can do is to give yourself grace, right? But focusing, you know, on the weaknesses is so funny, because I'll have, you know, people will send me back, because what I usually do is I usually make people give me a SWOT, and then I ask for, you know, their circle, you know, both professionally and personally, to, you know, perform the SWOT analysis for them as well, and send it to me, and I synthesize it, and then we have a great, beautiful conversation about it. And it's funny, you want to know the very first thing that they jump to?
I do. Tell me.
Yeah, it's weaknesses.
Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to know that, don't they?
They want to know what everybody else saw was their weakness. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually changed the W now. And weaknesses is kind of a nasty word in my household, because I don't believe in it. I believe it's information.
Or opportunities for growth.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, so, you know, I don't call things weaknesses. Like, I don't have fucking rules. I have agreements. I have agreements with myself. I have agreements with my family members. Right? It's softer.
I like
it
that.
It invites, right? And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, when you're armed with truth, going back to kind of being a truth teller, right? When you're armed with the real truth, then nobody can take that power away from you. And you can stand. You can stand in it, right? So,
in our last few minutes of this call and in our podcast, I would like to get to a couple things. And thank you again for being a guest on the show. It's been a delight to
hey,
to know you.
It's been my pleasure. You know that.
When you think about the legacy, we talked a little bit about your superpowers and your gifts and all those things. When you think about your legacy and the impact that you've made as the life architect here, what do you sort of want people to have known you for? Not say about you in the former question, but what do you want to have been known for?
I really want to be known for giving the gift of love, truly, and embodying love for others that they've never experienced. And that is the freedom, and that is the generational shifting all combined, if you think about it, because the greatest gift is love. And most people, I remember I was at a retreat, and never forget it. It was so impactful. We were doing an exercise and doing a lot of releasing and of the things that no longer served. And this one beautiful, beautiful client of mine, you know, we got down to the real, right? You know, the red blood, you know, most people get scared about. The black blood's what you really need to be afraid of, right? To that level, when you ever get to the black blood, as I call it. And we got down to the black blood of, you know, her biggest wound. And so as I was helping her release it, I actually held her. And when I say held her, I held her with love and just purity. Does that make sense whatsoever?
Yeah.
And she broke because she had never been held before. She'd been hugged, you know, but she'd never been held, truly held. So if I can be a holder of space and of love, then that's what I would love to be known for.
I think that the term for that is somatic. Is that, am I right on that? Like more of a somatic experience?
Yes, exactly.
Interesting.
Yep.
What's the place? What is the best place for people to find you if they want to connect with you?
Oh, goodness. They can find me all over the place. You can find me at my website at hporta. It's hporta.com. You can find me on Facebook under the Life Architect, Hillary Porta. If you want to check out my personal page, it's just Hillary Porta. You can find me on LinkedIn, of course, again, under Hillary Porta. And if you are going through currently a divorce or a separation and you need some extra support, you can find me at theshameslayer.com.
I like that.
I know, right? I just make up some fun stuff. But theshameslayer.com is a good place to find that support if you need it. And if you want to learn a little bit more about rewiring your subconscious, you can find me at Rewire. It's rewire.hporta.com.
Why do you have so many different pseudonyms in terms of branding and things of that, all these different layers?
Right. Because I told you earlier, you know, I have the freedom to create and pivot wherever I want to. So
but
I get
I'm just
to do
curious.
A lot of different things.
No, I'm not, and I'm not questioning. I'm just curious why you wouldn't have one sort of centralized portal where with all that stuff that could be navigated.
I do.
Through.
It's actually, yeah, it's on my website, meaning the main website is hporta.com.
Got it.
It's just under different services.
Got it. Understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
It just links to different landing pages, if that makes sense.
Well, Hillary, I don't even know where to begin to thank you for all the different things that you've shared with us for two episodes, because this is part two of the first one that we went a little bit lengthy down several rabbit holes. So,
oh my goodness, I enjoyed every moment of it. I'm so honored, honestly, Devo, not only to have been invited to come back, that you didn't kick me out. You know, my husband, he's Irish. He has this funny saying. He says, I'll only bring somebody back the second time if I have to apologize. Right. So anyway, but thank you so much for the time that you've invested and the wonderful conversations and just the sharing the evolution of who you are and your journey with me. It's so deeply appreciated.
Well, it's been my honor. Thank you. Really, the honor's been all mine. I've learned a lot from you, and it's been a fantastic conversation. I know that all of our listeners are going to get a lot out of it. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so for anybody who would love to connect with Hillary, all of her links, her copious amounts of links, will be listed in the notes below.
We'll just link that one. How's that?
Yeah, I'm just joking. But if you do want to connect with her, I highly recommend it. I've had multiple interactions with you, both in person and now, of course, over the podcast. And every time I walked away, just sort of shaking my head in wonder and amazement at how many different things that and gifts that you deliver in every conversation. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
What a freaking show, and what a freaking amazing woman Hillary is. Thank you, Hillary, so much. For our listeners, if this conversation has sparked something in you or you're interested, don't let it end here. Please connect with Hillary. And again, you can visit her website. The links are in the show notes below to learn more about her transformational work as this life architect and potentially do some sort of collaboration with her. And while you're at it, remember to like, follow, share, forward, whatever you do in your personal world. This particular episode, it's through your participation and collaboration that I can continue to bring on amazing people like Hillary. And if you're a purpose-driven leader and you are looking to uncover your unique blueprint, your unique brand, I invite you to visit me on thebrandstoryteller.com. That's my shameless plug. And I can take you on a journey of your own through your personal business and your branding and your personal branding, all those different things. And anyhow, that's it. So Hillary, thank you for being here and sharing your brilliance with me and my listeners. To everyone listening, remember, who you are is how you lead, and how you lead is how you grow. Until next time, I'm Devo, and this has been the Branding Laboratory. See you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.